Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Richard Lewis Show. As promised, we're going to get back on that content grind so we can hit our deliverables for our awesome sponsor, Rivalry.gg. If you go to the link rivalry.gg/RLS, you will qualify for up to $350 of VIP bonuses. It's a betting platform that does it right. It's ethical, responsible, and it's esports centric. So please go over there and support them. And as you will see, it's not the usual type of Richard Lewis show where I just bemoan the state of American politics. Now we're going to bemoan the state of esports, I imagine. My guest today is a Counter-Strike commentator who you may know, Corey Megaman Gilbert. Was last seen out, I think it was at ESCA, is that correct?
Last event that I did was Fragadelphia, a couple months back.
Yep. Yeah, there you go. Somebody who is kind of, out there, has been considered to be a controversial figure, although I don't think that takes much these days to qualify for that. And one of the things that I wanted to do over the course of the interview was kind of, turn over those stones, talk to you about some stuff, because I know what it's like to be perceived, not in a not potentially great light by the community. So I guess the first question has to be, do you feel the community perceives you that way, or are you starting to feel some community love?
It's a mixed bag, I guess, would be the best way to describe it. It's a little of both. I think that the most vocal people are the majority that don't particularly care for me. Mm. But there are, a fair amount of people that go to bat for the people that they appreciate in the scene and things like that. So there's some loyal followers out there, of course, but obviously the loudest, most vocal part of the community seems to not particularly care for me.
Yeah, I think, you can never really judge it as a percentage. People will go to the ends of the fucking earth and waste their time if they dislike you. I mean, they're so pathological in their dislike that they're willing to waste swathes of their time just to try and get under your skin and irritate you. For example, obviously I just did a Dota event, this weekend, and and all the threads that were made about the event, even like the schedule threads, like really benign things. There was one user in there, and if you just look at his account history, all he ever posts is Richard Lewis choke loady, or some variation of that joke thereof. I can't even, it's obviously not his main account. I can't imagine, you log out of one account on Reddit, you have to sit and watch all of these threads spring up just so you can get in there and make this like really tired joke about a factually inaccurate occurrence just so you hope I see it and then get upset about it. You know what I mean? I think hate is, like, when you get to that level, like it's quite frightening, kind of like how disconnected from reality you have to be to do that.
Yeah, there's I distinctly remember one guy, and it'll probably, when this gets posted or whatever, it'll probably come up again, where it's like any Reddit thread that's ever been posted in the past maybe 2 or 3 years that has anything to do with me, there's always a comment on there by one Reddit user that just says Corey was a dick to me and a pug.
Oh,
that's all it is. Yeah, that's the only comment.
But that's all you realistically need to do to sort of gain someone's like permanent ire these days. It's almost as if when you achieve a certain level of status or notoriety, or you get employed to do a certain thing in the community or whatever, you cease to be human. And if anyone catches you on an off day, like, who has played Counter-Strike and never raged? Like, straight up, like, I would love to meet them. I don't think the fucking Dalai Lama would qualify, right? And obviously that one individual caught you on that one bad day. And fuck it, let's not pretend it was just one bad day. I'm sure anyone who's played Counter-Strike for a prolonged period of time has had multiple bad days. Yeah. But they write you off permanently for that. While I'm sure in their minds, they wouldn't want to be permanently judged on, their worst moment for the rest of their life by whoever it was they encountered. They would openly admit that if you were to do that to them, it would be unfair.
Yeah. And I mean, let's not, hold back on it. I was an asshole for a long time when it came to playing Counter-Strike, because I'm sure you've heard, or anybody else that's been in the scene has heard, and it's one of those things where, like, you can't really contextualize it by saying, you know, I'm an extremely competitive individual. I want to win every game that I play, but I do, you know, I want to win. I don't like losing. Nobody likes losing. So like the competitive side mixed with the rage side and things like that, it's just a recipe for disaster. I mean, I haven't even played Counter-Strike. I don't even have it installed right now. I haven't even played Counter-Strike in probably 4 or 5 months, maybe even longer than that. Because, you know, with the way that the scene has perceived me and their minds and, you know, stuff that's happened 2-3 years ago now that's still continuing. I mean, the same thing with you and the whole Dota incident and all that stuff. It keeps getting drudged up. It keeps coming back. And it's never, I know it's never going to go away, but it's like, that seems to be the main subject matter that people focus on is, oh, he was a dick to me and a pug one time, you know, back in 1999 in the beta or something like that. You know, it's just, it's getting to the point where it's almost ridiculous to this point where I don't even want to play the game. You know, sure. I love the game.
I think the thing that doesn't help, I was going to talk about this a little bit later, but, you know, while we're on the topic, is there was that YouTube video, that quite famous one of you. Where it's like some guy is like fucking just running around, you know, having like his best game, and you know, you're calling him a cheater and whatnot, and you know, like, I think on the one hand, you know, I always kind of hate the idea that, you know, someone's going to out of context record you while you're playing and talking. Like, you know, I had to stop playing Counter-Strike as well, because especially in North America, my voice is very distinctive. I get recognized a lot, and it goes one of two ways. Usually it's either they want to talk because they're fans, and that's fucking great, but then in that moment no one's really playing the game, so it doesn't satisfy that particular urge. Or, you know, just as often that they try and troll me because they want me to rage and get a little YouTube clip out of it, you know.
Yeah, so exactly.
So I just don't play it anymore. It's like when I play Dota, I don't get recognized. Nobody knows who I am, even when I talk, you know? So yeah. I can be myself. And sometimes that does encapsulate, you know, some of my worst elements, you know? Again, if you think Counter-Strike's fucking bad, Dota is mind-blowingly bad.
It's a good thing I don't like MOBAs particularly.
Yeah. But let's talk about the, you know, the creation of those clips. Because, you know, I'll use your own words. I mean, you do come off as a gaping asshole in that, you know, collection. And I'm sure it's quite deliberately framed that way. I mean, was that just a very bad day, or you know, what kind of happened?
I mean, that's one of the things. It was so long ago now that I can't remember, you know, if it was particularly a bad day or what it was. But the main clip that you're talking about was, you know, I was streaming and everything. I was playing with some friends, playing some matchmaking and stuff like that. And a guy just got under my skin, man. And it was like, we were losing. And then you compound this guy who recognized me because of commentating. So he was, like you said, I mean, trolling, trying to get under my skin, doing this, that, and the other. Turns out he had been stream sniping me the entire time that we were in there. And I, you know, people I've tried to say that before, and people are like, well, how do you know? Well, he was talking in my stream under the same exact name that he had in game.
Yeah.
You know, so that's pretty obvious there. That, not to justify my raging or being a dick or anything like that. You know, it still wasn't cool saying things that I said and stuff like that. But, you know, I can't particularly remember if it was because I was having a rough day or if it was just, you know, one thing compounding on top of another. You know, I'm sure a number of different factors go into it and everything like that. You know, maybe a teammate not pulling his weight, and then the stream sniping and the trash talking.
It is another thing, this. Let me know if this rings any bells. With me, right, like, you know, because I don't know, I don't really have, like, I always get told that I do, but I don't really have, like, some sort of, like, insane ego. I don't think of myself as, like, a celebrity or a personality or whatever fucking term you want to use. And whenever I'm criticized, what people always say is, oh, you know, you should know better. You shouldn't behave this way, because of who you are and the platform you have and the state you have. And they make up a bunch of bullshit rules as to why I shouldn't have human moments, why I can't lose my temper, why I can't tell people what I think of them, why I can't tweet mean things. And I always just think, you know, this in that moment, you know, like I just think of myself as a regular person. I'm not expecting it to get recorded, get put on YouTube, it make the front page of Reddit, and everyone go, oh, look, he's doing something we've all done. What a scumbag. He should never work again. Because it seems so bizarre to me that I'm almost like worth that effort, worth that outrage. Yeah. When, you know, when I play Counter-Strike or any game, I'm just another fucking gamer like everybody else. But, mm-hmm. but you know, I never get afforded that courtesy. So I don't know if that kind of...
No, it definitely resonates. You know, it's one of those things, like, especially after commentating for such a long time with ESEA and doing ESL Pro League for the first three seasons before they moved into the studios, you know, the bedroom casts and all of that yeah. we used to do. Anytime, and it was crazy because my rise early on in Counter-Strike, I think, was just too fast. And it got to my head. And like you said, the whole ego thing came out. And I think that that also had a factor to play in a lot of the things that I said to people, the things that I did in the server and things like that. Not to mention, you know, also it was to the point where, you know, name recognition would go in there. Because I use Mega Man as my alias when I played games. Yeah. It's been my alias for 12 years, 15 years in Counter-Strike. So I'll drop into a matchmaker or something like that. And before we even start the game, you know, people on my team or people on the other team recognize the name and they ask, you know, real Mega Man? Are you the real yeah. one? And then I'm almost to the point now where I'm hesitant to even say yes or no or dignify anything with the response. Because if I say yes, they're like either, oh, cool, man, let's have a good pug, or fuck you. You know,
yeah,
it's like there's no middle ground to be had. It's one or the other. It's usually the other. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's like you can't even play the game now because you can't show, like you said, you can't show human emotion anymore without getting ostracized, clipped, uploaded and tagged on Reddit. Mm.
You talked about, you know, the bedroom broadcasts and kind of your longevity in the scene. One of the things I wanted to do is kind of give people a better understanding. You know how it is. Esports is taking off now. There's not a lot of people that really know their history. You know, there's people who don't know that I used to be a caster, used to be a manager, used to run teams, used to coach people, you know, but people don't know that side of me. They know me as a journalist. And what I find more and more now is that the people who think they're old school go, oh yeah, he's from StarCraft or whatever. And it's, you know, it's completely wrong, of course. So I wanted you to kind of like lay out, you know, the very early days, you know, how you kind of got into casting, you know, where it all kind of started, you know, some of your contemporaries, just to kind of give people an understanding that you're not like one of the new wave. You know, you have been around, like you said, for a long, long time and used that alias for over a decade.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of funny, actually. The very first taste that I ever got of commentating was as a joke way right. back in like the 1.6 days, kind of, you know, playing in the competitive scene back in Cal and things like that, just to make like lighthearted jokes and stuff like that when we were playing, when we were in a tense match or something like that. You know, I would die and a teammate would die, and then I would just jokingly commentate the remainder of the round. Mm. Just, you know, they'd laugh, you know, but put on the over the top announcer voice and everything yeah. like that, and kind of do it as fun. And then later on down the road, still in the 1.6 days, a guy actually that I was teammates with asked me if I could seriously commentate like an ESEA clip. You know how they do like the ratings of clips and stuff like back in the day, and you could win prizes and stuff like that on ESEA. So I loaned my voice to it. I recorded a little thing. He pieced it together with the video that he was doing, and I think he ended up getting a reasonable, you know, reasonably high vote. It was a pretty sick clip on Nuke back in the day. It was pretty cool. But then you kind of fast forward and into Counter-Strike, and you know, I got my feet wet. The first thing that I really did was Fragadelphia, the very first Fragadelphia. And this, I mean, you think they're, I think the last one that we did was Fragadelphia 12,
yeah,
maybe 13. So they've been, you know, they've been running for quite some time now. And I was in on the ground floor, the very first Fragadelphia that I did. They put a post on ESEA, said that they were looking for commentators. And I said, well, I'll give it a shot. Turns out I ended up commentating. They tried, I think it was a 16 team LAN. They tried to do it all in one day. I ended up commentating for 27 straight hours. for my very first.
Yeah, that sounds like old school esports right there.
yeah. So, you know, but as soon as I started doing it, man, I just fell in love with doing it. And it's one of those things now, like juggling a full-time job. I just moved in with my girlfriend. She's got a 5-year-old, you know, juggling family and a job and all these people saying like, oh, well, if he wants to continue in the scene, he should just, you know, do it in his free time and all that stuff. Well, I'm 33 now. Free time isn't something that's a luxury so much anymore as it used to be.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, that this is the other thing, you know, like you're doing all this, you know, work and you've been there for a while, you know, so long, and it's something you obviously enjoy doing. And there was a period where, you know, you could make time for it. And I remember you, you know, like I say, as an ESEA mainstay, that's the period of time I always kind of like think was like when you were at your, you know, absolute best. And it was always weird to me that you didn't like transition into, you know, because like there's people who come up and they you know, I think about like Scrawny, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, like, no, I brought him up a few times. I think he thinks I don't like him. But he went from doing the exact same thing you did on, you know, with a Reddit post where he was just jokingly commentating around. And then he did another clip and then he did another clip. And now he's obviously working, you know, premier events, right? Yeah. And it just feels kind of weird that there wasn't that transition for you. Because I think everybody would admit, like, you got a great voice, great look, you know, with a beard. The name's good. Glad you didn't stick with that Riftcast thing.
God, that was a fucking mistake, wasn't it?
Yeah, 100%.
Jesus Christ.
But
I knew that was going to come up at some point.
Yo, don't worry. I've got a few things that I'll say about that. I'm going to tie it all into this. You know what I mean? Like, you should have. I just feel like you should have been doing fucking DreamHacks and like, you should have been right up there, you know? And it applies to a few people. You know, you think about like Vince is another example. Of a really good, really talented commentator that for whatever reason never really got the respect he deserved. A lot of people think he's like some new school guy. He's fucking not. I remember him like when I was like writing about fucking Call of Duty 4.
Yeah.
You know,
I was gonna say he's been around for quite a while. You know, and personally, in my opinion, I think he's one of the best commentators that the scene has. Mm. And I mean, you said it yourself. It's like he either he doesn't get the opportunity or the opportunities that he gets because he's put out the videos about health issues and things like that the travel is just too much and he can't participate in the event, you know, which sucks. And I was, you know, face it being what they are and everything like that. I was truly, it was such a great moment when they brought him into cast a best of three at the major. I thought that was phenomenal. Kudos to them for doing that. James and DDK for hooking that up or whoever it was that hooked that up, because that was just absolutely awesome.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely one of the better things they did over the course of the major, no doubt about it. And yeah, I was really made up for Vince, you know, because when we hit him up to do the No Majors Club, he just said, "Oh, I'm not going to be by the stream today, Rich." And I was like, "Oh, why? You feeling all right?" You know, immediately went to health, like, you know, because he said he had a few headaches. But he went, "Oh, God, I can't bloody say anything, please." It was just like that. Was like,
oh, and then he showed up at the major.
Yeah, and then he was at the fucking major, you know. So it was like pretty funny.
That was great, you know. And you talked about Scrawny. I think he's a phenomenal commentator, and again, great voice for it, and everything like that. And like you said, I mean, with the way that he rose up by just putting a clip on Reddit, and everybody loved it, and he did more, and then he started to get the invitations. And you know, for me, the whole transition from ESEA to ESL Pro League, you know, and then they wanted to move everything to the studio. Cause it's like you talked about the people that I worked with that were coming up before they kind of really blew up. You know, I got the pleasure of casting with Sadakist, who's widely known as one of the best commentators in esports, not just CSGO, but esports in general. You know, and I got to commentate with him before he went off. And I think the first thing he did was might have been a PGL thing, or it was something in Bucharest, or I think. And he went overseas. Yeah, he went overseas to do something. And I think that's where he met Henry. And then obviously the rest is history with them. And, you know, commentating with Jason, with Moses before he blew up and all of that. And the final season of ESEA Invite, getting to commentate with Anderson Simler. you know, still to date, probably one of my favorite moments in commentating was being able to sit next to Simler and broadcast the best of three on LAN. Yeah. You know, it was super cool. And the scene definitely lost something when he went over to Overwatch. But
well, another classic example of the scene basically driving somebody out. I mean, okay, look, I won't put it all on the community's doorstep, but I'll always be fucking real about it. There was obviously, you know, the partnership, they felt it stagnated a little bit, and Anders and Semler wanted to go their own separate ways and find new partners. And Anders had sort of chosen Moses, and I think Semler was kind of like, you know, who am I going to go with here? You know, because I think in his heart of hearts, I think he wanted to still do it with Anders, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't think he wanted the partnership to necessarily go the way it did, but you know, but equally, I think he was smart enough to identify that things did have to change, because you know, those were the first guys that really, you know, when you talk about how important commentators are, right? I just did this Dota event, as I said, where I was trying to explain this to like some of the talent I was working with. They're still in the world of like play by play and color and very delineated roles like that. I think what we did in Counter-Strike was kind of like what you saw from like Tastosis, which is we moved away from that more traditional aspect and we go into storytelling, where it's two people building up a story and adding separate elements and into. And the first commentators to do that were Anders and Semler, but mm-hmm. but then because of that, they spawn, you know, the likes of DDK and James and Henry and Sadakist and all these other great partnerships that we've had. You know, it's almost as if they were the kind of architects of their own, you know, kind of downfall a little bit as a partnership, because it's like once you've given so much to commentary, where do you go from that? You know, like how do you stay fresh? How do you reinvent? And so yeah. So I think with Semler it was a tough one, but the community didn't help. Because the community had this fucking, you know, constant threads about, oh, got a constant Semler, it's fake hype, he repeats the same phrase. Like, he's been doing it for 4 years. Yes, guess what? Commentators have idiosyncrasies. They say the same thing. Go listen to a great fucking commentator in sports. You will hear them repeat phrases. You will hear them repeat intonations. You will see the syncopation of speech repeated over and over. This is how it is. And Semler's curse was just over familiarity, you know? And the community were fucking unbelievably harsh to him. And when he left, now what do we read? God, I miss Semler. And I knew that was going to fucking happen. I told Semler, I said, listen, brother, right? Like, you know, if it's true and you are heading on over to the Overwatch League, you know, because we kind of had an inkling that was going to be the thing. I said to him, I said, everyone's going to want you back in 6 months. You know, so don't be too sad about it, but obviously he's fucking killing it over there, so why the fuck would he come back, you know?
Well, it's you know what, I saw something not that long ago that got posted on Reddit about him, and it was a clip that somebody had taken from the Overwatch League, from one of the matches in Overwatch League, and they put it almost side by side with the happy Deagle Ace on Inferno.
Yeah.
And it was almost identical to the way that he commentated that like 2 years or 3 years ago when he did that to this Overwatch League clip. And of course the outpouring of love and support for him and everything came back, where they're like, man, I miss Simler and all that stuff. It's like, yeah, well, you miss him now. You didn't miss him when you were talking mad shit about him, ostracizing him from the scene and basically pushing him out the door to go do something different. I'm glad he's found success. I think he's phenomenal at what he does. Not only that, but the other thing that people don't realize is, behind the scenes, off the cast, everything like that, Simler is one of the nicest people I've ever met, and he's also been one of the most supportive individuals. When I was rising up through, you know, the ranks, quotes on that, rising up through the ranks and everything, he was the guy that I could bounce questions off of, the guy that I could ask for advice and everything like that. And he was always quick to dole it out and quick to you know, have kind words or, you know, constructive criticism. So I had nothing but respect. I've told him this a number of times. I've got nothing but respect for the guy.
Yeah, and I think as well, you know, he was one of the first people that kind of wanted talent to like unionize up and unify and, you know, stand up to some of the bullshit that was going on for tournament organizers. I'm actually writing a series of articles at the moment about the history of the majors from my perspective, right? And I've got to Collusion of Poker. I've got as far as that. And, you know, one of the things that, again, I don't know if people remember this, but to get Moses to that event, you know, all the top talent that, you know, that were making the most day rates there took a pay cut. you know, and that was Semler, you know. So to get Moses to that event, which was, I can't remember if it was the first major Moses had worked. I think it was. Semler was the guy that basically said, you can shave off X amount of my day rate to make room in the budget so we can get this guy here. So, you know, it's like I say, whatever people think about him in terms of stuff he did, you know, his output of work, which I always thought was unfair anyway, he was also a very big part in terms of like helping launch talent and giving people a platform and, you know, kind of encouraging us to be a bit more businesslike in how we handled ourselves.
You know? Yeah, the whole Room on Fire thing, you know, working with Nip early on with Anders and everything. I mean, it's like you said, I mean, they were the quintessential pair at the start of it. They molded it. They were the architects, like you said, you know, they were almost, you know, the machinists to their own demise as a duo because of it, because they basically, like you said, wrote that script. And, you know, this is, if you want to be successful at it, take this, put your own twist on it, and you'll be good.
Yeah, they gave everyone the blueprint.
Yeah, and it's crazy to look back on it and think, you know, we don't have this guy in the scene anymore because X, Y, and Z. It sucks. It sucks.
Do you think that one of the reasons why maybe you kind of struggled to get that kind of final just push over the top to where I think you should have been was the lack of a partner? Like a solid, because it's really weird to me, right? I've said this to everybody. I understand why partnerships work in esports, but I absolutely hate them as an idea for a lot of reasons. I think first of all is that, you know, people always come as a package, and then those packages always want to commentate together because that's where the chemistry is. It makes it very hard to like break them apart. People don't like it. The community don't like it. But I think honestly, it should be about the individual and how you operate as an individual, and anything that comes after that, chemistry-wise, is a bonus. But a lot of individual talent has said, and even talent with partners have said, if you don't have that solid partnership, it's very hard to get to events these days. And that was, I think, also a little factor that hurt Vince, who we were talking about.
Yeah, and I mean, absolutely it hurts, you know, and it's, originally coming up with doing the ESEA stuff, it was basically myself and Moses commentating together, you know, most of the time. It would either be myself and Moses or Sadakist and Moses. Occasionally it would be myself and Sadakist, and then they brought Blue in. So then, it would be Blue and Moses, or me and Moses kind of thing. But ideally from the jump, when I first got into it and doing the ESEA stuff, and I still to this day would absolutely love to partner up with Moses, because I think he's absolutely phenomenal at what he does. Yep. He's the one that kind of bridged the gap, between a color and a play-by-play, where he can really do both. He can analyze, he can be a host. He's a jack of all trades. I think he's phenomenal at what he does. But ideally, you know, from the get-go, he was the guy that I always envisioned being my partner down the road. But then obviously, you know, things happened. He started doing the tri-casts with Anders and Simler, and that was a huge success. So it was like, you know, go do you, man. Like, I'll figure things out. It's, you know, we'll you know, catch up sometime, have a beer and talk about it. But, you know, outside of that, it was like, go do your thing, because you're crushing it right now. I don't want to hold you back by any stretch of the imagination. And then, you know, down the road, it was like, all right, some pro players started to retire and things like that, or started to take a step back. So I thought maybe I could snag one of them to do some to do some commentating with.
Yeah, like Blue and Days did for a little bit.
Yeah, like I wanted to, I reached out a couple of times, but the schedules didn't permit it, to try and get Nothing on there, which would have been fun because both of our last names are Gilbert. So, you know, but you know what he could bring to the table and everything. I've tried to get Sean, Garris to do some commentating, but he still wants to play, and he's also doing analyst desk work and stuff like that. So it's tough to get scheduling in. But most recently, the one person that I had talked to and, found good chemistry with at the last Fragadelphia was working with Strong Legs, which is a whole can of worms there. So, you know, as soon as you find, you know, somebody that you're comfortable with working with, it's like something happens or the schedule doesn't come up.
That situation, it really fucking sucks. And again, you know, I haven't got time for bullshit now more so than ever. I'll just lay it out there. I mean, I think he's a prime example of like just a fucking wasted talent, man. Like to go and, you know, because I listen to his cast. I think, I liked his work. But to even be placing bets is dumb. And then to have ties to people who, you know, allegedly fix matches, and then to get it, and then to get outed by the league that you most recently worked for while you were on a break. It's like, dog, I know the freelance life is fucking hard. I mean, shit, I used to couch surf. You know, I know how tough it can be, but there's always something. If you got to go take a job of fucking Trader Joe's and stack shelves on the weekends to make ends fucking meet, power to you. But what you can't do is start using inside information to win money on betting, and then perhaps even more shady stuff. Now, he denied that. It doesn't ring true to me. His denials don't ring true. I think basically, I'm not saying it was his idea to fix the games or anything, but what has the ring of truth to it, what looks to be true, is that these guys said, hey, we're fixing some games, do you want in? And I think he said, I'm fucking broke, so yeah. And it's like, it's sad, man. I've told him the good news is I don't think that will follow him if he goes somewhere else, but like there's a cap on how far he can go in Counter-Strike now because of that.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
It's a shame.
And, you know, with ESEA severing ties with him and everything like that, he's going to be treated, you know, almost as, for a lack of better word, a cancer for an organizer to pick up, because then all of a sudden, you know, the community might forget for the time being what happened, past transgressions and things like that. But as soon as he gets hired for an event, it's going to all come washing back in. Yeah. And that's an unfortunate thing, because, you know, that rings true with me as well, where it's like, you know, if I get hired for an event, all of a sudden, and this isn't just like for me or anything like this. I saw, what was it, for Star Ladder, when they announced the talent and everything like that. So much hate and everything going on just on Twitter is like, oh, why are you hiring Pimp?
Yeah.
Like, since when does he get any hate?
Yeah. I mean,
you know,
it's like one of the things that I absolutely loathe about the kind of current esports traditions is talent announcement days. I just hate it. I would just rather we just started the broadcast and whoever was on the fucking broadcast is on the broadcast. Instead of like a week before, or sometimes even longer, you do a big announcement and you say, these are the people we're going to be using for this broadcast. And it's just an invitation to the community to be like, hey, why don't you go tweet at these people and tell them you fucking want them to die? You know? And it's like, yeah, I don't really see the benefit of that. I don't see what it brings in terms of, you know, no one's clicking on that content and it's being monetized,
right?
You know, so what is the upside, other than it's just like a little bug in everyone's ear to remind you that the event's coming? I'd much rather see, you know, do a cool little promo video, you know, do something fun, do like a teaser trailer of the event, release that, put that out there, rather than a talent announcement. Because talent, plus as well, it definitely that there are some divas in esports, and I'll be kind for now. I'm not retiring just yet, so I won't name names. But there are some divas out there, and this whole talent announcement culture definitely feeds into them. You know, they get announced, and then everyone's like, "Yeah, it's great to see him again." You know, and it's just like 500 comments about that and how he's better than everyone else or whatever. You know what I mean? It does feed that fucking demonic ego that any broadcaster, any, you know, film star, any TV star, any musician sort of has to have to do what they do. And it's, it's just a poison as far as I'm concerned. I don't know if you agree about
that. No, I do. And you know, to expand on that even more is, and I've had this before as well, when I've gone and done events, you know, when I did like the Take TV event over in Germany, or when I did the eFrag event and stuff like that. When that gets posted, then all of a sudden you see, adversely from the guys who are getting their egos inflated, you see, like, and this always, it kills me too, because I'll see it and I'm just like, oh man, come on. Where it's like minus Mega Man plus any other commentator's name, insert here, kind of thing. And it's just like, what the fuck, man? Like, I've put in my time. I did the entire qualifier. Nobody had any problem with any of that stuff. But as soon as you get announced to do the LAN finals, everybody all of a sudden has a problem. Yeah. And that's one of the things, you know, like being in talks with like Starladder and stuff like that. Recently was talking with them, and I put out a tweet. I actually ended up deleting it, but I don't mind talking about it. Sure. You know, I've done their online qualifiers for Starladder for almost 3 years, if not 3 years now. And never once have I been invited to do their LAN finals, which, you know, it hurts. I understand it because they obviously want to get the best talent out there to do their LAN finals and things like that. But it still hurts where it's like, man, I'm putting in all of the work leading up to this, but the big payoff is going to the LAN, getting your name out there, doing a stadium event, things of that nature. And it just feels like, you know, you kind of get gypped in the long run when it comes to that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And when I brought it up, to them this past time after I did the qualifiers and they announced iLeague, you know, LAN and all that stuff. And I was just like, what do I have to do in order to prove to you guys that I'm worth bringing onto the LAN finals? And they linked me the Wikipedia page of the other commentators and said, you need to have a resume like this.
But, I mean, that's like some Mad Catch 22 bullshit right there, isn't
that's
it?
The first thought that went through my head is it's a double-edged sword and it's a Catch 22. It's like, well, if you don't hire me for your event, then my resume is not going to look like that. And, you know, and it's, I'm living in North America. If the events are in Europe, they're already, you know, disinclined to invite me to it anyway, because it's going to be more expensive to get me out there. You know, I got to deal with jet lag worse than somebody who's going an hour. I got to go, you know, forward six time zones, this, that, or the other. I get it, but it's still like to link that and say that that is your, you know, catalyst for invitation to it. And then I look at my page and it's fucking bone ass dry because I haven't done events for, you know, and I'm just like, well, what the fuck am I supposed to do? I don't meet your requirements, but you keep hiring me to do your qualifiers.
Yeah. I mean, another thing I think as well though, right? Like we're all talking about, you know, how online Counter-Strike is kind of like devalued, right?
Yeah.
You know, so why not use, because like this is the thing, I you know, I'm always loath to say tiers. I think it's all very subjective.
But I've never been a fan of that system either. But
yeah, you know, like if you're a tier two guy, in terms of perceptions, that comes with its own like set of baggage, right? Like there's an sort of intimation that you can't necessarily be tier one, but it's how people talk about it. So whatever. But yeah, let's say for example, right? You know, like we've got all this online Counter-Strike. First of all, I still think we're headed towards like some weird fucked up oversaturation problem in Counter-Strike. I think the top teams are playing each other too frequently for it to be meaningful. I think you look at the fucking numbers for like the ESL stuff. I understand why they do it, because it's to hit like sponsor deliverables and stuff. And like obviously it acts as a qualifier, like kind of one long qualifier to get you to like the Pro Series LAN finals. Just feels like I'd rather it was like an almost like an invitational, or it was going off a global ranking system. But if you absolutely did have to have online Counter-Strike, why couldn't it be with like a different set of teams, a different set of talent? You know, like I don't talk to any commentator in Counter-Strike who's not burnt the fuck out. My man Duncan just did the podcast the other day. He's been on the road for 3 weeks and he's out again going to another event. You know, it fucking killed me. It was why I was very quick to like, oh, what's that E-League? You want to hire me full time? Brilliant. Oh, and I'll have to ask permission to work all those other events. Yeah, I'll get right on that. I don't think I asked permission once, because I didn't want to do it. You know, like I'm too fucking old. The road is a fucking killer, man. And it's like, why aren't we using the other talent we have available for the online Counter-Strike instead of using the, you know, tier one talent for it? When, you know, I'm sure if they were fucking being honest about it, they probably like to duck out on the fucking online games as well.
Absolutely. I mean, especially when their credibility and everything gets them hired for events more than their, you know, current, I don't want to say work ethic, because obviously they put the time in and everything like that, but they don't have to grind anymore. They've put in the time,
yeah,
you know, and that's the thing, is like, you've got these up and coming commentators, like, you know, the new duo with Launders and Scrawny. You know, obviously they want to get their hands in everything that they can possibly get into to make sure that they can get a foothold in the environment. And it's extremely difficult. That's the most discouraging thing, I think, right now for anybody who wants to get into commentating, is that it's so difficult to get a footing right now, because it's like, you've got your three power combos that are out there. You've got, you know, the, as they call themselves, the B-Stream team, which is like Hugo, Just Harry. I guess they'll have Scrawny and Launders probably doing that. So even that's been filled up. So it's like, what's left for anybody else who's trying to crack into the scene? If you aren't already established and already have a partner, it's so incredibly difficult to get anywhere in the scene. And like, proof positive with me is like, you know, I took a step back, and obviously, you know, you had your thing with Duncan before where you're like, is he in? Is he out? Is he in? Sometimes he's in, sometimes he's out. And it's like, I've taken a step back because I wanted to work on my attitude. I wanted to work on, not because I want to be perceived better in this community, because I just want to be a better person overall, not just for possible opportunities down the road in this, you know, job, but also for my girlfriend, for her son, for my real life, for my occupation that I have to do, because I can't support myself full time doing esports right now. Yep. You know, I have to work a 40 to 50 hour a week job, you know, rent to pay, bills to pay, things like that. You know, my free time gets sucked up, but it's great. I love it right now. I'm absolutely loving where I'm at right now, because it's like, I've got this amazing structure behind me, backing me no matter what I want to do. And it feels amazing. And I know that that was only made possible because of the changes that I've made in my attitude over the past 2 years.
Well, that's a good way to kind of follow on to this, the thing that we were talking about, because we brought it up. I think we even discussed it over Twitter. There was this ongoing thing where, there was like some jokes made, and there was a perception that you were kind of getting passed over and actually being deliberately not hired. So, I mean, first of all, there was obviously the famous Duncan tweet, which was obviously just a joke where it was like, he was making fun of the community or somebody else. Or I don't even know if it was you who put it out there initially, but somebody was kind of saying like, oh, we keep Mega Man out, you know. So he was like, look, we're having our annual meeting to discuss, you know.
It was because of a tweet that I had put out, because I had gotten an email and was actually in the process of getting my plane tickets sorted out for an event that I was going to.
Right.
And then received another message from them saying that I was no longer part of the talent team because somebody didn't want to work with me at the event. Now, they didn't name names, and I didn't name the tournament organizer because I still want to be, you know, I don't want to
be professional
slam
about
my
it.
Foot
it.
In the
yeah.
door.
Yeah.
But I put that tweet out, and it blew up. Obviously it got like 1,000 likes or some shit like that on Twitter. You know, my little Twitter community of 11,000, 1,000 likes is a big deal. Mm. But, you know, then obviously Duncan being Duncan ran with it and put that picture out, which I took it as a joke. I didn't take it seriously or anything like that. Cause I'm like, I know that obviously didn't transpire, but the community thought that, you know, potentially it could have, which is just another, you know, whatever the fuck you want to call that. But so that kind of spawned that whole Reddit thread, which, I mean, was, now obviously I go on Reddit. Obviously, if I see something with my name on it, I'm going to click it. I'm going to read through the comments. But holy fuck, did that depress the shit out of me.
Oh, sure. I believe it. So this is what I did kind of off the back of that, because obviously, you know, I've been in a position where at E-League, you know, one of the things that we did always talk about was kind of, you know, interpersonal relationships, because you want a good green room, right? Mm-hmm. And also have chemistry on the broadcast. You know, like, for example, it's almost a blessing in a way that Mo kind of fucked up with the whole CSGO Diamonds thing, because he was doing a killer job on the broadcast, and all the execs loved him and loved what he brought to the show.
Well, he's got personality for days. There's no denying that.
It made me look like a fucking genius. Cause I was like, so basically what had happened was, you know, there was a delay in getting Duncan out there due to some paperwork or whatever. And, we needed somebody, and there were some other names that kind of passed across the table that I put out there. I think Launders being one of them. And basically, they were like, you know, we need somebody that's going to occupy that like big Duncan personality role. And I was like, well, listen, this is the guy, like straight up, like Mo is the guy. And then I think they went away and they looked at some clips of his stream and they were like, this ain't it, Chief. And I'm like, it fucking is. Trust me. Like I've known this guy since like 2006. This guy will kill it on live TV. And that was my first kind of like big dick. I said, it's got to be him. And they brought him in and Mo did a great job. But then the next problem was everybody wanted to keep Mo. All the crew loved him. He was loads of fun backstage. Even like the makeup artists fucking loved him, you know. And Duncan was coming. And Duncan and Mo had gone at it on Twitter, you know, because Duncan had pointed out, like, you know, what he did was like massively unethical around the CSGO Diamonds thing. And it made him look a real piece of shit. So I was like, how the fuck are we going to reconcile this? You know what I mean? And they already didn't get on. Like Mo had fucking said, oh, you know, he's a fucking loner at events and he doesn't dare talk to people, which is absolute bullshit, of course. And I don't even think Mo and Duncan have even crossed paths at events, you know? So I was like, I'm pretty sure I can smooth this out. I know both guys pretty well. And then obviously the CSGO Diamonds thing came to the attention of the executives because we all had a fucking morality clause on the show anyway. I know I did. I couldn't like be associated with gambling, you know, firearms, tobacco, all of that nonsense. So in the end, we didn't have to worry about them, you know, both being on the show because it could have been fucking disastrous. But it could have also been brilliant.
Yeah, it could have been incredible.
You occupy that fucking madness, don't you? That kind of mad zone. But oh, that's
a fine line to walk.
I definitely understand. Why that's that kind of perception about you wanting to keep it professional and wanting to not throw them under the bus. But equally, I will say this: like it's good to know who the issue is with, because then you can go and squash that beef. Or maybe you go, oh yeah, well there is no fixing that, you know, and right. and I'm just gonna have to factor it in as I go through my esports career. I'm sure there's people out there that would flat out refuse to work with me and would never admit it to my face, you know. I would always like to know about it. Like if a tournament organizer came to me and said, hey Richard, we were going to use you as a host, but this person says they don't want to be at the show and we're going to go with them. I'd just be like, okay, that's fine. You know, it's not even a big deal to me. I wouldn't even consider that a drama or a betrayal. You know, if they felt that strongly about it, then let the person that has the most pull kind of win, I guess.
One thing that I do want to say here, I don't mean to cut you off or anything.
I'm talking too much anyway. Sorry, buddy.
Yeah, the community, as soon as Duncan made that tweet and everything like that, everybody assumed that it was Sadakist.
Yeah.
That was the issue. I will flat out go on record and say absolutely not. I wasn't given a name, but Sadakist wasn't working at the event where this transpired. So it absolutely couldn't have been Matt. And, you know, obviously him and I have had our disagreements over the years and everything like that. That's bound to happen. I think him and I actually have pretty similar personalities, which is probably why we butt heads a little bit. Sure. You know, boisterous, outgoing, shit like that. But it wasn't Matt. It had nothing to do with Matt. And for anybody who still wants to think that it was Sadakist that's like trying to sabotage my career in this space, the only person who's ever done anything to sabotage my career in this space has been myself. So please, by all means, stop running his name through the mud when it comes to anything like that, because it absolutely wasn't him.
Well,
not have been anybody either. It might have just been the tournament organizer just trying to cover their own ass because maybe they couldn't afford to take me out there. Maybe they, you know, decided after the fact that they didn't want me and they just formulated that as an excuse. I don't know, because they never gave me a name.
So I did some digging because I remember you at the time. Right. So again, all roads lead to Mo. Mo tweeted something out that honestly is unconscionable. Like everybody on the fucking, you know, all the regulars of the show, anyone who watches my stream knows that I'm friends with Mo, right? Like, I consider him a friend. I will always criticize him for what he does wrong, though. Yeah, we're that kind of friends. You know, like, I think he's done some things that I really wish he hadn't, because it does create a conflict in my brain. but I've just known him too long that it's just like, listen, he fucked up. He did some bad stuff, but he's like 95% a good guy. Mm-hmm. And then he just has these moments where it's like, he just doesn't fucking think. And there was definitely one of those moments that applied to you when he tweeted something out, like basically saying, you know, you don't get to work events. And then he it's not even that he intimated it. He said something about sexual harassment, which is obviously a fucking unbelievable allegation to make, especially as things stand at the moment, where it's obviously an allegation that must be substantiated. It can't be thrown around loosely for multiple reasons. And this is a person with a huge fucking following saying it about a person with a smaller following. It's like really irresponsible to throw that out there. I know he subsequently deleted the tweet, but I just wanted to pick your brains about all of that, because I actually went away and I interviewed a few people ahead of this interview with you to talk about some of the stuff that maybe has gone on. And maybe that's why you've had a few roadblocks. And then you can obviously, we'll talk about that, but that didn't come up. So, I mean, I don't know where that rumor got started. Maybe you've got some insight into it, but I also just want you to talk about, you know, kind of like, what's it like having that shit thrown out there about you?
Well, and obviously it sucks, you know, because it goes from being a tweet to being a Reddit thread to being a deleted tweet to being an archived, screenshotted post, you know, and it absolutely sucks. But to the other side, too, is like, a lot of people, whenever the whole subject of me not getting hired for events and stuff like that comes up, and seeing people say things like, oh, he knows why he's not getting hired, he just hasn't said anything about it. Truth be told, I actually don't know. I've reached out to a number of individuals, especially anyone who I've had a rocky past with, to say, you know, hey, if I've ever done anything or said anything to offend you or, you know, discredit myself or make you not want to work with me, you know, I apologize. I don't want to have any bad blood. I don't want to burn any bridges. I'm trying to mend fences here, you know. And out of all the people that I've reached out to in the scene to find out more information, especially after that came out, when Mo tweeted that, and I was going, well, what the fuck is this? You know, because I haven't heard anything like that. So I started to do my own little digging and everything like that, you know, and asked around and stuff. And out of probably, I think, maybe 8 or 9 people in the scene that I messaged to try and find out any information about it, I got one response back.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, people, they like to avoid conflict. I think that's true.
And I understand, you know, their trepidation in responding.
Yeah, and they probably think you're going to go, like, you know, crazy with them if they tell you, you know, what their perception of the truth is. You know?
Right. But I will say that the one response that I got back knew absolutely nothing about what Mo was talking about.
Sure. So. And again, you know, I think this is one of those situations where, in the absence of the truth, people fill in the blanks. So this is how the thought process goes, right? He's not being hired. For that to be true, it must be something serious. Nobody seems to know what it is, but everyone knows it's something serious. Sexual harassment is serious. Therefore, you know, it's a case of, you know, fucking 2 + 2 = 5, you know?
Yeah.
And I've seen that happen a lot. You know, people fill in the gaps, you know, especially about myself, right? People fill in the gaps. It becomes a reality. People repeat that reality, and then other people repeat it. And before you know it, it's like,
hell in the cell.
Yeah. And then people like Mo hear it, and then boom, they put it out there without really, because, you know, I mean, obviously Mo's just a fucking streamer at the end of the day. He's not like a journalist. He doesn't have an ethical obligation to go out there and like double check rumors that he heard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but equally as well, repeating unsubstantiated rumors is just a shitty thing to do, especially if you've got a platform, you know. But I mean,
yeah.
So,
and it is what it is, you know. It sucks. Basically, to answer your question as short as possible, it sucks.
Oh, sure. I'm sure it does. So look, here's what I got, right? And you can tell me if any of this rings true. So, one person described you as a fucking party animal and said that Which, by the way, I mean, I don't know if this is actually a criticism. I'd consider that a fucking plus, but, you know, whatever. they described you as a party animal and said that at events, you know, it was very hard to keep hold of you. You know, sometimes you'd be drinking on the job. Other times, you know, you would be like, you know, kind of trying to get out of casting some games so you could spend a bit more time at the bar and catch up with friends and stuff like that. But basically that they always had the impression that actually if you did come to an event, there was always this risk that, you know, you might go out there and party first and do the job second, or try and, you know, walk that tightrope. And I'll also just add to that, I think a lot of us do that. I've told jokes and stories about how we've done broadcasts hungover as fuck many times. Some I'm still pissed from or drunk rather from the night before. One of the things I like about the Counter-Strike guys and the Counter-Strike talent pool is we are pretty fucking rock and roll in that regard. So it does seem a little bit unfair, but then it kind of makes me wonder just how wild was fucking Mega Man back in the day.
Well, I mean, listening to that and everything, I don't think that there was ever a time. The only events that we ever really drank at was, you know, after the broadcast for ESL Pro League, when we were back at the hotel in the evenings, Fragadelphia, we would drink during the broadcast, but it's more grassroots. Yeah. The Take TV, you did the,
well, yeah, you have to drink at Take TV. Dennis insists. Yeah.
So that's they that insist that you do. But as far as like trying to get out of commentating games in order to go to the bar, I don't remember an occasion that would have happened. Mm. The only thing would have been maybe the ESEA invite. I think it was season 17, the final season of invite for ESEA, might have been something along those lines where they thought that I was drinking too much or anything like that. But
honestly, yeah, I can follow on a little bit from that. Like, you can tell me if this is true or not. Apparently ESEA was so worried about it, they had a member of the production team kind of keeping fucking tabs on you, like just to make sure you weren't going out there and going too fucking crazy. Is that true?
I don't know anything about that. Maybe it was like a undercover mission that they had for production person, but that, as far as I am aware, no. But you know, again, it was like that was in Dallas, Texas. That event was at a DoubleTree, which had a massive bar in the lobby, which was right next to the ballroom that we were broadcasting out of, and all of the players were staying in that specific hotel. So we would finish the broadcast or finish our duties for the day, and we'd go over to the bar, have a few drinks, then we'd go to bed. You know, so maybe it was perceived one way when it was really something else. Now, it's like to build on the whole personality thing, you know, being outgoing, being boisterous, and my girlfriend will even vouch this, is that I can come off as maybe being flirty.
Okay.
When I don't necessarily mean it, because I'm just kind of extroverted. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
To where,
so like just to, you know, anybody in general or
yeah,
it's, like people working the event or whatever.
Yeah, it's nothing to do with like you being a dude or a chick. It's just I'm a friendly guy, you know. I'll talk to anybody. I tell her I'm a social butterfly. I can go out to a bar by myself and make 10 new friends by the end of the night. You know, that's just my personality. So I can understand if that gets perceived in an over the top kind of way, or as maybe too aggressive, or maybe flirty to you know, maybe that's where the whole sexual harassment thing came from, is, you know, maybe I was talking to somebody and the subject matter that was at hand got a little escalated or something, where, you know, we were talking about boyfriends or something, or girlfriends or something like that. And, you know, maybe that's where that spawned from. That's really the only thing I can think of.
Would you say the term, you know, party animal is fair? You know, I mean, party animal to me means, yeah, because I've definitely gone through phases of life where I fit that description. There was definitely a period where I was working in esports where, you know, I'd be fucked up most nights. I mean, you know, that's what I consider a party animal. You know, somebody who literally, it's like, You're like Slurms McKenzie from fucking Futurama. you're just always fucking out there, you know, fucking
red reference.
Eyes, absolutely dead inside. But like the party's got to fucking go on, you know, because that's what people associate you for, you know.
As far as being a party animal, I can say with 100% confidence that I've never actually been drunk at any event that I've ever been to. So, you know, back then, I mean, we're talking 3-4 years ago. You know, sure. I was 29 years old, 28, 29 years old. For me, going out and having 3 beers nowadays means a blistering hangover for the next month. You know, it's to the point now where I'm getting older and the whole drinking thing. I don't really even drink anymore. I have 1 beer and I want to take a nap. Yeah. Like that's where I'm at now. Now, 4 years ago, maybe I would have a few more beers when I was out, but it was never to the point where I would get sloppy. Or at least never to the point where I thought I was sloppy. Maybe somebody, because of a mixture of my personality and they also see me drinking, think that those two things are tying into each other and potentially, you know, oh, he's being loud and ridiculous. He must be wasted. That actually, and funnily enough, to quote Duncan on that one, funnily enough, I can actually draw a parallel to that because I actually used to work as a waiter and a bartender for a wing joint over here. And I was permanently cut off by our manager from being eligible to drink in the establishment as long as I worked there after having 2 beers.
Nice. I see. So it's kind of like the either, and I don't believe this, you would either have to have a very kind of like low threshold towards alcohol or...
Oh, you'd have to be a pussy. You'd have to be an absolute 1 beer, you know, it would be ridiculous.
Or more likely, you have a pretty big personality, and then when it's augmented slightly by alcohol, you know, people get the wrong idea. They think, oh, well, he must be drunk to have this bigger personality, right?
Right. And, you know, there's multiple factors that go on top of that, too. It's like when I'm hanging out with my friends, I get loud. Right. And as by proxy, because of that, and I'll tell you this story as well. When I was actually 10 years old, I went to a birthday party with my brother and I got hit in the ear with a water balloon, which rendered me about 3/4 deaf in my left ear.
Right.
So sometimes I talk louder than I perceive myself talking. It's like when you see a little kid with headphones on for the first time and they turn to you, hey, you know, like, because they don't understand how loud their voice is in retrospect to the dampening of the sound in their head. That's, you know, one thing that I'll say is like, I can get a little bit rambunctious, obviously, but I can get loud because sometimes I don't understand how loud I'm talking. It's something I've struggled with ever since then. Cause I've got scar tissue that built up. I've ruptured my eardrum and I've got scar tissue on my eardrum.
Right. So the other thing, there was certainly some, right. So, obviously, you know, ESEA went through a bunch of changes in terms of management and stuff, like when it got kind of folded into the MTG project. So one of the sources I reached out to over there was able to say that there were a few people who were like kind of aghast at you being rude and using unsavory language and that kind of thing in the ESEA pugging system, because they kind of felt that, I mean, and again, you wouldn't be the first person to do it, and there's also been like admins who, like, you know, would just kick everybody and shit, like, you know what I mean, like they've had this like checkered history with it, but they kind of felt that, you know, oh, if that's going to come up like every time we have them on a broadcast, it's like it's a poor advertisement for our product. So that was another thing that was out there.
Yeah, and I mean, there's no denial for me, obviously, with the whole getting heated when I play and things like that. You know, things come out of your mouth that you don't necessarily mean. And, you know, it actually was to a point where ESEA would actually tell me not to pug, or at least if I'm going to pug, not to stream, because they didn't want a misrepresentation of what they were about or what their product, what they wanted their product to be, to be misrepresented by me and using vulgar language, the whole thing with the raging and videos. I'm sure if you watch that video, I'm sure there's parts in there that are not exactly savory, to say the least.
Yeah. Well, so does that kind of like give you any, you know, kind of fresh perspective? I mean, does any of that like surprise you? Because you know me, I'm a thorough guy. Like, I go out there, I do a lot of digging. And I wanted, you know, when we sat down to talk, to be for it to be like this kind of, you know, if I can help you kind of make sense of it.
This is,
you know, what I was able to find. And basically it's the stuff that, you know, the ESEA relationship was kind of soured a little bit by people complaining about how you behaved when you used their service. There was obviously this idea that you were a fucking wild man of Counter-Strike. And then, you know, as you said, sometimes, you know, unsavory language, getting back to people. But I mean, I couldn't find anything that like lined up with what Mo said, or you know what I mean? So I don't know if this kind of helps or if it actually isn't what you were looking for.
No, I mean, it absolutely helps. And you know, that's one of the things. As far as the party animal thing, I think I've kind of given my two cents on that, where I don't necessarily see it, but somebody from a third party perspective may. But as far as like the whole unsavory language and things like that, that's where taking the step back and working on my attitude and working on my perception and working on the way that I approach things, the way that I talk about things and stuff like that, that's where that's really helped me over the past 2 years. Is, you know, I see myself as being very, very different from how I was when I first came onto the scene. And there's no faster way to realize that you fucked up than just getting completely your legs taken out completely from underneath of you. And that's sort of what happened as far as my commentating career is gone, you know, where I did, I think, the first 6 Fragadelphia lands, but then because of something that I said of, we were sponsored with when, what was it? CSGO Lounge was still around. They had a sponsored match on there, but we were commentating. I think it was like Swag's Pug with AZK and those guys came to Fragadelphia, and we were, I think it was Torqued that was playing. Yeah. I think they were playing under that. And, we were watching them, and we had, you know, pretty good viewership for a grassroots LAN. We had like 3,000 or 5,000 people that were watching at the time. Mm-hmm. But because there was a match on CSGO Lounge, we had to switch in the middle of the match. I think actually Scott Sir Scoots tweeted something out about it at the time, where, you know, we had to switch to this other match. We ended up losing almost half of our viewership because we switched to a match. People were pissed off about it and they left. Mm-hmm. And I made comments while we were on the broadcast about how stupid it was that we were changing from this high octane match of, you know, I buy power band guys getting an opportunity to come and show their stuff on LAN again. And then we switched to, you know, Joe's Money Crew versus Snail Trail, you know, who the fuck are they? So I voiced my grievance with it during the broadcast. Well, I wasn't invited to come back to the next Fragadelphia. When I sat down and talked to Sasquatch, who organizes everything, that was the subject matter that came up. I apologized for it, and I got to do this last Fragadelphia.
Yeah, and like, listen, you know, I've known Sasquatch a long time. He's a good fucking guy. Like,
I was happy he was okay with the whole Madden thing that happened, that tragedy that was down there. He was there.
I know it was really fucked up. I talked to him. You know, I've known him since he was a fucking player, if you can believe that. And I totally didn't know he was, you know, that hands-on with running events. And yeah, he told me he was down in Jacksonville literally at the event where the shooting took place. And I was like, fuck, you know, I didn't even think that there would be a chance that there could be anybody I knew there, you know, let alone like somebody I've known for a long time. So I was pretty fucked up. It just shows how crazy the whole thing was. Yeah, but yeah, real bad. But yeah, I mean, like, he's also a good guy. Like, he's a fair dude, you know.
Yeah,
like, you've got to go some distance to piss that guy off permanently, I think.
Yeah, and it's like I said, I mean, I actually went out of my way to go to the Fragadelphia before that. I think it was 11, where they had in a big warehouse. It was actually a really fun event. Huge warehouse. They rented out for it. But I drove up there. Wasn't working the event or anything like that, but I drove up there to just talk with him, you know, because I'd rather do it face-to-face than do it through a social media platform, especially since I know, you know, hey, he'll be here. I can maybe get a couple of minutes. If he says, go fuck yourself, then, you know, I'll fuck off and not worry about it. But he, you know, sat down and talked to me, and I talked to him and said, you know, I apologize for crossing the line and burning bridges with you in the past. And, you know, he said, all right, well, once the next Fragadelphia comes up, I told him, I was like, I'm still interested in working at the events and things like that, if you'll ever have me back. And he said, well, when we get closer to the next one, we'll talk. And he shot me a message on Twitter and said, are you interested in doing it? And I said, fuck yeah. And, you know, the rest is kind of history. My first land that I've done in almost 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you as well, you're in pretty good company because I don't know if you remember this, but there was an MLG event. I want to say it was a Quake. I think it was part of they were doing a Quake thing. Or it might have been a StarCraft thing, but I think it was a Quake thing is how I remember it in my brain anyway. And they got too good on. And the event was having like some delays and stuff. And he just made the joke going, well, you know, I'm not used to delays like this because I work for DreamHack, you know, implying that they were a superior event. And MLG just removed him from the fucking broadcast there. And then he just got told, like, you've got to go. Like, it just came in his ear, like, you're off. And they just pulled him off the fucking broadcast. And that was that, you know. So some people do get a little bit precious about it. I think, you know, on the one hand, I understand it. Like, you know, they say it's a golden rule that talent shouldn't throw production under the bus and this kind of thing. But, like, sometimes if something sucks, like, what? I have to go back out and face that community. And if, like, I'm the face of that decision or the voice of that decision, when we all know it's stupid, like, even the people who did it know it was dumb. You know, like, why can't we just be honest about it and say, look, like, live in the moment, yeah, we fucked up. Sorry about that.
Well, it's like at the Star Series thing, Duncan got his little jabs in, you know?
I mean, that's fucking Duncan, though. Like, he's, like, on another level to everybody else. I mean, like...
Oh, yeah. Well, the shit he gets away with saying sometimes is like, I'll sit back and I'll be, ooh, man, if I said that, never work in this industry again.
Well, so I can even put it in another context. Obviously, season one of E-League, you know, we're desperately trying to make this work so we get picked up for future seasons. We had all the stuff with Duncan having to be a little bit delayed because of paperwork and Mo coming in and then Mo having to go. And fortunately, no mainstream media picked up the whole CSGO Diamonds thing, you know, which could have happened, right? Mm-hmm. I even think there was some issue. We had like a school shooting, I think, pretty early on. And we were obviously, you know, aghast, and we had a promo video where the concept was we would take the Counter-Strike players out to a firing range to shoot AR-15s. So you can imagine, right? Like, so we were just like, we were under the hammer, but you know, we powered through a lot of stuff that happened early on that could have really like changed history and derailed the show, maybe got us fucking canceled, or maybe we had to change what game we used, or you know, stuff like that. And then Duncan gets out there, right? And obviously, the production team we work with, you know, great guys. They're all learning esports for the first time. And we had, like, a partnership with HLTV, you know, to get the stats, right? So they didn't understand, because they're coming from a traditional sports background, they don't understand how, like, frequently lineups change, you know, how teams and orgs are two separate kind of concepts. So they pulled all of the stats from HLTV, basically, you know, like for map tendencies and like, you know, win percentages, but they did the whole history of like each team initially on the first run of graphics we had. And we were doing the show live and it was like coming up, you know, they've played Inferno 500 times and it's like this lineup hasn't even played 50 maps together yet, you know, and their win percentage on this map is so obviously it was going right back. So I was trying to be, because obviously it's not their fault that it's a fuck up, it should have been picked up before, but there was no one up in the production room to let them know.
Because they didn't know.
Yeah, because they didn't know, right? Like, everybody involved in the broadcast was all traditional sports. So it's like, obviously, we bring it up in the next day's production meeting or next week's production meeting, and it doesn't happen again. But, you know, there was a lot of adjustments that were happening on the fly while we were building graphics and trying to do more with the show. So anyway, I'm there, and I'm going, yeah, and I just want to say as well that these statistics do incorporate, you know, previous lines, previous iterations of the lines, just like that. And Duncan was going, yeah, these stats are garbage, mate. I mean, they just don't mean anything. I was like, fuck it, we're on live TV, dude. Like, please, you're going to get us fucking killed. Like, you know what I mean? I'm going to go sit down with the executive. Yeah, these stats are garbage. They're absolutely meaningless. And I was like, oh, fucking hell, you know? But that's just Duncan, man. Like, he just gets away with it, doesn't he?
I've always appreciated his quick wit and banter. And sometimes his lack of a brain mouth filter, think sometimes, but it definitely makes for some very interesting moments when it comes to the whole desk, like smashing the baguette and things of that nature, where, you know, iconic moments that are forever ingrained in the community for, you know, I mean, that's a legendary moment. You think back on that and it's like, oh, what's one of your favorite Tharin moments? Well, when he's talking about the French scene and smashes a baguette on the desk. You know, it's just ridiculous, ridiculous shit.
Yeah, that's the one part I do miss about, you know, kind of when it was a bit more, you know, kind of open.
Laid back.
Yeah, you know, like we would always work up these stupid, goofy skits. You know, we had like the whole Thorin pretending to get beat up by Fox fans. We had Henry G with a Thorin beard pretending Thorin had been kicked up abroad. You know, I would come up with all these like little stupid skits and be like, right, are we
gonna... I remember the Thorin beard one. They actually did that the one time, didn't they?
Yeah, that's what we did. We that was Henry who did that one because Thorin wasn't at an event. I can't remember why. We made it look like Thorin had been removed from the broadcast or something.
I just remember him slowly panning up from behind the desk with the fucking shit looking beard off.
And this is like what I would do, you know. I would like go out and I would like look for stupid goofy props and just bring them in and be like, can we do anything with this? Fart guns, fake beards, you know, the baguette thing. I think we took that. There was like a bunch of French fans that were right near the stage. And I was like, give me the baguette for the next bit. And I knew fucking Duncan would fucking love
run with it.
Yeah, he'd love to fucking smash a baguette in front of French people. I do miss that stuff. But let's because I know I'm conscious of time. So let's talk about, you know, kind of what's going on next. You know, you're back in the talent pool. You're doing lands again. You are certainly out there. I'm hoping, and I said it on By the Numbers, you know, that I hope people are willing to not let rumor and insinuation kind of potentially hamper a career of one of our more experienced commentators. So, you know, what comes next? I mean, are there things on the table, or is it kind of like a fingers crossed thing?
More the latter than the former. I actually don't have any offers on the table. I have been reaching out to a number of different tournament organizers just to see, you know, if I can get a foothold in there or anything like that. Like you said at the beginning of this recording session, like I've got some messages back and forth with DreamHack to maybe eventually get on board. I know they're booked up to the end of the year as far as their talent is concerned. So hopefully maybe this coming year. But I put out a tweet probably a week or week and a half ago, just pertaining to everything going on and, you know, where I stand right now. And the main thing is, it's just like, I'm to the point now. I said, I'm 33. I live with my girlfriend, her 5-year-old son. I've got a full-time job that I've got to take care of, bills that I've got to take care of. I can't continue to hold on with my fingers crossed that something's going to change. So I'm all for continuing to work CSGO events. And if I get hired to do qualifiers, you know, weekend work or anything like that, more than on board to do stuff for tournament organizers as far as laying the groundwork to set up for a phenomenal LAN event for them. But as far as I stand right now, you know, it's just the clock is ticking, you know, and as much as I would absolutely love to be full time in the space, having the whole family thing now and knowing how stressful the travel and everything can be, it's just extremely difficult to, you know, expect or hope to get full time into the scene where I could potentially be spending a month or 2 months on the road away from the family and everything like that. So I've kind of resigned myself to, if events in North America or the occasional European event want to have me out to do something, I'm absolutely on board with doing that. But for the time being, what I'm looking at potentially getting into is actually changing to a different genre and, well, different title, and starting to work in the Call of Duty scene, possibly.
Oh, what, doing the Blackout stuff?
I've been more interested in doing just the regular Black Ops 4, the competitive scene. Right. Not necessarily like COD World League, because I know that that's really kind of the quintessential Call of Duty, you know, platform for all of the players, all of the big names and everything like that. But I wanted to start to at least try and get into it. And a couple of my friends that I've made over the years, especially, you know, talking about like fantasy, G2 Fantasy is like a variety streamer for them, but he knows a lot of people in the scene. A friend of mine that I met,
is that Fantasy with the PH?
Yeah.
He's old school. Yeah, I know that.
Yep. Hey, I've been watching some of the clips of him playing COD as well, dude. Guy's a monster.
Yeah,
but, beast. I was recently in the Netherlands and I did a blitz, what was called the Blitzkrieg Major for Battalion 1944, which is like a throwback, an homage to like the older school Call of Duty games. So I was over there doing that, and you know, hearing feedback from the tournament organizers, as well as they had devs there, Bramerton, the guy who's kind of the head developer for the game, he was there, you know, and hearing nothing but positive feedback from those guys, and also having them say, you know, we'll get your back on this. Like, I'll reach out to, you know, tournament organizers and see, you know, what maybe influence I have to potentially get you jobs and doing that stuff. So it's actually been pretty good. I've got a number of individuals that are big in the Call of Duty commentating scene, like Revan and a couple of other guys, Pac-Man, who did the E-League thing recently. So some of those guys that I'm starting to, you know, follow them, they followed me back, start to open a dialogue with them and see, you know, where the waves may take me. But it's like I said, I mean, being 33 and the time kind of ticking on the whole thing, I'm not exactly holding out hope that anything's really going to change. I'd like it to. I would absolutely like it to. My girlfriend always talks about how she'd love to go to Europe and potentially move to Europe. So, you know, maybe sometime down the line, if things change, we'll figure that out as it comes. But for now, you know, I'm not really holding my breath, but it'd be nice to get, you know, a few jobs here and there at least.
And you're not feeling the whole battle royale craze?
I got pretty heavy into Fortnite, to be honest with you, and I reached out a couple of times. Yeah, I did.
You must be like the oldest player, I think.
Thanks. Yeah, I appreciate that. I personally thought that personality-wise, I would have been phenomenal at doing Fortnite commentating.
Yeah.
I thought that I would be really, really good for doing that. I reached out to Keemstar because I know that he was doing the Friday night Fortnite and stuff like that. Never heard anything back. Obviously, he's a big fish and I'm just a little guppy. But you know, never really expected to hear anything back. But you know, doing stuff like that for Fortnite would have been really, really fun. I think I could have made that pretty entertaining. But as far as like doing the battle royales, I mean, I'm on board. I'll do anything. You know, we didn't really talk about it, but I put that tweet out that said, you know, I will work your event for you for free if you get me there.
I did see that.
And I know
we talked about that on By the Numbers, actually.
I don't think I saw you guys talk about that. I'll have to go and look that one up again.
Yeah. Well, you know, but just to give you the cliff notes, all we said was basically that sometimes you got to be careful with the whole doing it for free thing, because it's nothing will put talent's noses out of joint more than that, because there's no counter offer to free. You see, if you say I'll do it cheap, then now you've said, well, yeah, maybe we'll be willing to lower our rate. You know what I mean? You get into a negotiation. This was something that happened out in Korea for the StarCraft guys. There were people out there who very famously were like, listen, we'll do events for free. And it went down like a fucking fart in an elevator. So, I mean, that's all you missed. We were just sort of having a back and forth about that. But it, obviously, in your situation, dude, like, I fucking totally understand it. You know, for whatever reason, there's been this kind of, you know, pressure, if you like, and
it's been tough. And the main reason that I put that out and the whole Reddit thread that went along with it, I think that tweet blew up like a motherfucker. It ended up getting like almost 5,000 upvotes on Reddit too, which was ridiculous. I didn't think it was going to get that much of a backing to it, but you know, there was a couple of people that were in that thread that got it. Most of the people were like, oh, the smell of desperation and everything like that. It's like, fuck yeah, I'm desperate. Like, I'm fucking floundering here. Like, I'm drowning. Like, you know, and I didn't necessarily do it as a sign of desperation. I did it as almost like an internship would work, you know? Somebody brings you in, you do the job for free. If you're good at it, they fucking hire you. You come in, you give them your rates and everything like that, and then the next time they bring you back. That's the way that I was looking at doing it. Is like, okay, if DreamHack wants to have me come out for DreamHack Austin, right? Let's just put it out there as, you know, say that happened. They bring me out. I do the event for free. I do a fucking terrible job. They don't ever have to worry about hiring me again. Or I go over there. I'm professional as fuck. I do my job like I'm supposed to do it. I go above and beyond as much as I possibly can. I do the best broadcast that I possibly can. They take note. They go, hey, you know, he actually wasn't as bad as the rumors are saying that he was to work with. He was actually pretty cool to work with. Then they hire me to come back, and then we can negotiate a fee for it at that point. That was the main thing that I was thinking during that is, like, I don't want to come out and say, oh, yeah, for a four-day event, I want, you know, $6,000 or something like that. Because I personally, I don't even know what the going rate is for a fucking commentator right now. I don't even know what I would be worth to an event. So I'll do it for free. Then we can haggle on a price later on down the road.
Yeah.
You know, that was my initial thought process behind putting that out there is, like, that's why I said, help me, help you, help me, help you kind of thing is, like, so you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. And everybody's like, well, what's going to stop him from just going on there and, you know, saying the N-word during the broadcast at a DreamHack final or something like that? And it's like, do you honestly think that I would shoot myself in the fucking foot after putting in 4 years worth of work in this scene, not exactly getting to where I want to be, and then offering to do work for fucking free? You think the next course of action for me is to spout racial slurs or, you know, homophobic phrases on a broadcast? No.
Yeah. So just as a final point, you know, could content be the answer? Because, you know, look, people probably don't notice. Like, one of the most requested pieces of content that I always get is to do Silvercasts. But you were doing Silvercasts before I was doing Silvercasts. I'm pretty sure that's true.
I think I actually stole the idea from you.
Did you?
I believe so.
I always thought I fucking stole it. Well, not stole it, but, you know, I thought I fucking saw you doing
that. Borrowed it. That's fine.
Yeah. But, I mean,
one way or the other. Yeah. And that was actually a point that got brought up in that thread was, you know,
cause guy, people do love that shit, you know?
Yeah. And the problem with it is, personally for me is, like, you go into Counter-Strike and you go to browse and it shows, like, what big stream things are on there. There's no real way to pinpoint, like, a silver match to watch live. Yeah. So I had to kind of rely on people sending me their VODs, sending me their clips or their matches. And then it usually just ends up being somebody who's a smurf. I had to sift through like 60 things just to get four a night for a week.
Yeah, and there were definitely some challenges to doing it. I mean, we were doing it live, but there was definitely some fucking heavy smurfing going on. But I didn't give a fuck. So I just tunnel in on the other nine players that weren't fucking smurfing, and it was just as funny, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, we had a great time with it. And it's funny because, you know, the people that submitted clips to me or submitted their demos to me, they came into the channel hoping that I would do there. So there was obviously an incentive for the people who sent the clips in to watch because they don't know whether or not I'm going to show their clip or anything. I've thought about getting back into that, but the problem, again, it comes back to the whole family thing. I have a 5-year-old in the house. It's very difficult to get quiet for, you know, a 3-hour period. When you've got a 5-year-old running amok in the house, but, you know, it's something that I'm considering potentially bringing back as well, just to do is, you know, a fun kind of thing. Cause I got reasonable viewership. I think I had like 150 viewers for it. So it wasn't, you know, terrible.
Yeah. It was always the most watched shit that we did whenever we streamed live up until this, like, No Majors Club we did, which fucking took off. But yeah, whenever we were like doing a Silvercasts thing, people went fucking crazy for it, dude.
Yeah. They love that kind of content.
Yeah.
So it might be something to look into. I mean, I think I even uploaded a couple of the VODs on Silvercasting YouTube. But, you know, I'm no graphics wizard, so my thumbnails were never clickbaity enough.
Yeah, I'm hiring guys for that now.
I need red arrows and cleavage and all that kind of shit to get the kids to click on them.
But between me and Sam, we've not got the gift, so I'm bringing in some external help for that. Well, look, I know it's getting close to time, so I'll just sort of wrap it up on this. So, you know, I understand, obviously, kind of time is a factor in terms of whether or not you're gonna, you know, kind of retire or look to get in, you know, other games or just see what happens. I mean, you know, kind of what's your final thoughts? Like, if you had like a message out there for, you know, prospective hirees, you know, just the community in general, you know, what's kind of the main thing that, you know, you would want people to kind of, you know, take from this discussion?
The number one thing I think would be, I realize my transgressions. I realize my mistakes that I've made along the way. And for any of the people that have come across my path and had a less than spectacular experience dealing with me, I do apologize. And I absolutely mean it. It's not because I've come on your show because I want to suck up to anybody. I might not ever get hired for an event again. And if I don't, the message stays the same. I was a shithead back in the day. Absolutely was. I was a dick. I was very rude to a lot of people, and I'm fucking sorry about it, man. You know, it sucks. And now I've got this perceived connotation that that is who I am. And that's not who I want to be. That's not who I want anybody to perceive me as, let alone the fact that, you know, my girlfriend uses Twitter as well. And she's got messages about me like, oh, you're dating a scumbag. You're dating a piece of shit and stuff like that. And it's like, it's not fair to her. It wasn't fair to myself to act the way that I was. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt for anybody who's been affected by the way that I've acted over the past couple of years or anything like that. But honestly, that's the number one thing that I wanted to get out there, is that I'm apologetic for, you know, being a complete piece of fucking shit for a while.
Well, look, dude, I mean, you know, I think everybody, you know, it's a lot to fucking process. Like, communities are kind of, you know, they're really weird. Like, esports online communities, it can be very easy to kind of like get shut off from reality and kind of behave in ways that, as you say, they don't really represent who we are once you put the fucking headset down and step away from the keyboard. I'm sure lots of us are fucking guilty of that. You know, the key thing is, as I said, keep in mind as well, you know, late 20s, we're all in a fucking state of fucking arrested development in esports. Like, we're all late bloomers. You feel me?
Like, hell yeah.
Once you start hitting fucking 30 something, and it's like, there is no outrunning father fucking time. I'm going to be getting up in the middle of the night to pee. I'm, you know, all of these fucking realities that no one preps you for, they're happening. I guess I do got to stop acting like a kid in some respects, you know?
Yeah. And it was a big wake up call, you know, and I knew that something had to change. So I've been steadily working. I mean, it's a day-to-day process, you know. It's not something that you can just flip a switch on. It's something that I work on every single day to be a better me for my family and everything like that. So it's getting there. I think that I'm in a much better place now than I was 2 years ago.
Well, look, man, I'll be pulling for you. I hope when people see this, I hope, you know, a few tournament organizers see it and they're willing to kind of give you another shot. That was almost, you know, I'll be transparent about it. That was pretty much my primary thing. And I knew we'd have fun shooting this shit anyway, but, yeah, I wanted to fucking make sure people, you know, kind of knew a little bit about what had gone on and kind of, you know, dismiss some of the preconceptions that are out there, you know, like the Sadicus thing and everything else. So, yeah. Like I say, I'll be pulling for you, dude. If I ever get a chance to fucking drop your name in someone's ear, I'll certainly do it. My advice, just fucking hang in there, man. Like, once you've got over a decade in anything, I think if you have to then leave it, you know, there's like a tragedy to that. I think, you know, it's easier said than done when you got a family to think about, but I always believe in, like, you got to be the fucking, you know, you got to be the rock, and you just got to fucking hang in the pocket for as long as fucking possible. And eventually things will come around, you know. That's my philosophy. So all that remains to be said is, dude, thanks for coming on the fucking show. I appreciate it. Glad we finally got to do this.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know, and all the best for the future. So we'll wrap it up there. Just a reminder, of course, at the end of the show, our sponsors are indeed Rivalry.gg. You can head on over to Rivalry.gg/RLS, where you will qualify for up to $350 of VIP bonuses. By doing that, you let them know that you came from this content, which further shows that they were right to support us in the first place, further enables us to create the content. So, you know, it's all a big, beautiful circle of life. So anyway, from me, from Mega Man, thanks very much for watching this, and we'll catch you on the next episode. Until then, take care.